my question for the first speaker. With respect to your beneficial talk about the creation of universe, can you tell us the end of the world, I mean the doomsday, how it's gonna be?
Can you repeat the last part there? I didn't.
And with respect to your beneficial talk about the creation of universe, right? And can you tell us something about the doomsday? I mean, the end of the universe, and how it's gonna be?
I can give you some of the speculation that we have out there. Well, there's a few things. One, we know that at some point, at least here on Earth, that the sun is going to get large enough that will encompass the Earth. That's about 7 billion years out, so I'm not too worried about it today. But, life here on Earth will clearly end at some point in time. What's intriguing, though, is that when scientists finally detected the Higgs boson, based on the mass that we measure for the Higgs boson and the mass that we measure for the top quark, there are some calculations that show that the very fabric of space-time in which we live is unstable. Now, it's unstable on the time span of billions of years, but what will happen is that the universe will decay to a lower energy state. And where that happens, it will then propagate out from that region at the speed of light. And so it will just, the whole fabric of the universe will just decay to something else where life is no longer possible. Now that could happen, it could be happening and coming toward us right now and we don't know, or it could happen in 100 billion or a trillion years. You know, there's no way to specify that given the data we have at this point. But I find it remarkable that the scientific data we have indicates that this universe is by no way eternal. That I find that very consistent, at least with the words of the Bible, where it talks about a new heaven and a new earth. And I'm not sure how the Quran handles that, but I find that a very theistic worldview, that this world is temporal. It has a beginning and an end.
Next question.
I would like to ask my question in Turkish, so could you please, thank you. Evrim teorisi bilimsel delilleriyle hani tamamen çökertilmiş olmasına rağmen neden çoğu bilim insanı tarafından hala savunulduğu konusunda görüşlerini merak ediyorum konuşmacıların. Hani neden hala okullarda okutulmaya devam ediyor mesela, hani kendileri bu konuda ne düşünüyor? Teşekkürler.
The idea as why do many, again, scientists embrace the evolutionary paradigm, it's, I think, largely, as I was pointing out in my talk, philosophical in nature, because many scientists have bought into this idea of methodological naturalism. And once you buy into that, then any idea of a creator's involvement in the origin of humanity, let's say, is just simply off the table. It's not a valid explanation, regardless of what the data says. That means you can't falsify evolution, you can't prove another theoretical framework that involves the work of a creator. And so when you see shared features, if the only explanation is evolution, then it must reflect common descent. If you see fossils, then the only explanation is there must be an evolutionary history of life. So it's So scientists are merely choosing to interpret the data in an evolutionary framework, but then they'll turn around and they'll say that this now constitutes evidence. So they're reasoning in a circular way, as opposed to actually objectively evaluating the evidence. There's no way to falsify evolution in the current construct of science. There's no way I know of to falsify it, but you can show prediction after prediction after prediction that is falsified. But you can't falsify it because there's not another alternative that can take its place that's permitted by the scientific community. That's why the sponsoring organization of this event is doing really an important work by merely highlighting that there are problems and highlighting that that again, there are philosophical components to the case for evolution. And this is not a trivial issue. I really appreciated what Dr. Babuna said, because I would resonate very strongly with that. I think the more I've thought about the implications of human evolution, the more I'm becoming disturbed by that. And maybe I'm just becoming a cranky old man, but I'm really very disturbed by what I see as the implications of evolution.
Thank you.
Would you like to add something, Dr. Babuna?
Well, I can explain it, like as Mr. Adnanoukhtar always repeated, there is a Darwinist dictatorship in the world. So they won't allow, as you said, in the universities or in academic places to talk against Darwinism. If you do that, you get fired, and you can't become professor. And even in the schools in Turkey, in the school books, we see always so-called evidences to support Darwinism. But if you want to talk about the emergence of the proteins, the structure of the proteins, or want to just show the fossils, nothing, no interpretation, you are not allowed to do that, even in Turkey and in all the Islamic countries. But the thing is, with the scientific struggle, this will come to an end. We are very sure about that. This is a Darwinist dictatorship, but in 5 to 10 years, the world will change, because it cannot go on like this. Because of these pervert ideologies, there is war, terrorism, violence, and lack of love everywhere in the entire world. Wild capitalism. For example, United States is one of the richest country in the world. 600,000 people, homeless people, are living on the streets. I lived in New York. This is the richest city of the world. And I've seen homeless people lying on the streets, and there are billionaires living in Manhattan. Nobody cares about that. This is because of Darwinism, selfish struggle. You have to struggle for survival. If you are strong, you will survive. If you are weak, you will get eliminated. This is given in the subconscious minds of the people. But with this scientific struggle, an alliance of the Christians and Muslims and scientists, this will come to an end, because it doesn't make any sense. And people started to understand Darwinism doesn't make any sense. According to most recent polls in Turkey, 95% of the people do not believe in Darwinism anymore, although Darwinism is being taught in the schools. But it was not easy. Mr. Adnan Oktar and us distributed 8 million copies of Evolution, the Seat on the Streets, free of charge, 100,000 copies of Creation Atlas to entire universities of Europe, in Europe and the United States. So it's coming down slowly, and it will come to an end, we believe.
Okay, next question. Buyurun.
All the friends in the audience are Turkish. Therefore, if you permit me, I will speak on Turkish. Evvela şunu söyleyeyim. Orijinimle ilgili hiçbir problemim yok benim. I do not have any problem with my origin. Problemi olanlar tabii araştırırlar, onu bulurlar. Dikkatimi çeken burada bir hayli fosiller mevcut. Vaktiyle çok eski seneler değil, İstanbul'da Kanlıca tepelerinde bir hayli trilobitler vardı. O zaman Teknik Üniversite 1. sınıftaydım. Paleontoloji adında dersimiz vardı. Ordinarius Profesör Malik Sayar çok yaşlı bir beydi. Paleontoloji dersi verirdi. Valla hiç hoşuma gitmezdi benim o ders. Bol bol fosil gösterirlerdi. Bir defa da Kanlıca'ya götürürler. Ben geç kaldım ama fosilleri gördüm. Tabii paleontoloji, arkasından stratigrafi, jeoloji de çok mühim, tüm tabakaları gösterir. Efendim, antropoloji, arkeoloji, onları okumadım ben. Fakat gördüm ki stratigrafi hariç, paleontolojinin bir kısmı da hariç, çünkü o fosiller bir takım tabakaları, o tabakalar dolayısıyla jeolojik yaşlara ait enformasyonu ve hatta o bölgelerde olan resource'ları verirler. Suhal Hanım, biz müzeye veriyoruz dedi onları. Ticari hiçbir önemi yok dedi. Evet, o an için ticari önemi yok. Fakat o fosillerden öğreneceğimiz çok şey var. Birincisi, biraz önce söylediğim gibi tabii kaynakları anlamak mümkün. Gerçi şimdi çok kuvvetli sismolojik metotlar var. yerin altında neler olduğunu büyük bir hassasiyetle tespit etmek mümkün. İkincisi ise biomimetik denen biologically inspired material, onlardan öğreneceğimiz bilgilerle yeni teknolojileri geliştirmemiz mümkün. Sadece fosil değil, bütün biyolojik varlıklardan. Gördüm ki bu biraz önce bahsettiğim dört branş, bir tanesiyle bir hayli ilgilenmek istedim. Bazı biyolojik çalışmalarım dolayısıyla güzel çalışmalar, çok iyi çalışmalar, fakat hiçbir şekilde teknolojiye intikal etmemiş, sadece şekiller üzerinde kalmış. Tabii arkeologların, antropologların işine gelmiş. Ama biz buna biraz geç intikal ettik. Efendim, daha çok Batı kaynaklarından ve Tevrat ve İncil'den örnekler verildi. Tabii ki Tevrat ve İncil mühim kitaplardan bizim inanışımıza göre ve o peygamberler de büyük peygamberlerden. Ama bizim peygamberimizin bir sözü var, duası var. Bana eşyanın esrarını öğret ya Rabbi. Eşya derken malzeme, material. Materyalizm değil. Eşyanın esrarını öğrenmek Veritas, Harvard Üniversitesi'nin giriş kapısında yazar. Efendim, büyük bir efendim yol göstericilik. İleriliğimiz ve geriliğimiz maalesef eşyanın esrarını öğrenmekten, material science'dan ve onların getireceği teknolojiden uzaklık dolayısıyladır. Bunun için ne lazımdır? Öğrenmek için önce, biraz uzatıyor muyum? Soru sormayacağım ben.
Estağfurullah, estağfurullah.
Biraz geçen devreden de hakkım var konuşmaya. Oktar Bey de bana biraz iltimas yapar orada. Eski bir dostumdur. Birkaç dakika sonra. Şimdi efendim, öğrenmenin yollarından birisi gözle. Eskilerin söylediği aynel yakın. O kafi değil. Gözümüzün göremediği, kulaklarımızın duyamadığı çok şey var. Ondan sonra ilmel yakın. İlimi bilmek. Ama ilmi bilmek için ilmin metotlarını bilmek lazım. 400 sene önce çıkmış bir kitabı okudum ben. Miftahül Ulum diye, ilmin anahtarları. Efendim, onu bilmedikçe, ilmin anahtarlarını bilmedikçe ilmin içerisine girmek mümkün değil. Şimdi Türkiye'de de, dünyanın birçok yerinde de çok sofistike aletler var. Birçoğunu da kullandım. Elektron mikroskobundan bahsedildi sabahleyin. Dünyanın en büyük, en güçlü elektron mikroskobu şu anda Japonya'da Osaka Üniversitesi'nde. Bu otelin yüksekliğinde. O mikroskop 25 sene önce de vardı fakat yenilediler. Orada yapılanlarda dahi lensler ve başka sebepler dolayısıyla eksperiment hatası vardır.
Buna rağmen, moderatörlük hiç kolay bir iş değil, değil mi?
Buna rağmen hakikate yaklaştır, hakikate yaklaştırıcıdır. Ama bazı eksperimentlerle, mesela İsviçre'de yapılan eksperimentle Allah'ın varlığını bulmaya çalışıyoruz. Tabii o eksperimentleri yapın, iyi neticeler verecektir. Ama Allah'ın varlığını bulmak için ve o milyar dolarları o eksperiment için harcamaya lüzum yok. Başka
değerli
şeylerde.
Hocam, çok teşekkür ediyorum.
Efendim, biraz uzatıyorum galiba hocalığım.
Sadece soru sormak istiyorum.
Konuklarımıza da sormak.
Ama bütün gayemiz veritas denen hakikate ulaşmaktır. Bunun için İslami kaynaklarda da çok şey var. Hazreti Ali diyor ki, bana bir harf öğretenin, men allemeni harfen ve fakat sayyereni abden. Batı aleminde de bunu takip edenler çok oldu. Geçen hafta çok kıymetli bir hocam vefat etti, Profesör Can Kan. Malzemenin içerisinde eksperiment yapmadan ne olduğunu keşfedecek kadar deha sahibi, intelligent ability, ability of thinking, yani tefekkür sahibi bir adamdı. Şayet araştırmalarınızda o kabiliyeti yerleştirmezseniz, ki aşağı yukarı 800 sene önce İbn Haldun'un kitabını dahi yazar bu ve İngilizceye de çevrilmiştir. Harvard'da ders kitabı okutulur.
Hocam, bir ricam var.
Efendim, ben bırakıyorum, kesiyorum.
Evet. Sizden... Yok, hayır hayır, ben başka bir şey rica edecektim. Buyurun. Sizin isminizi, telefon numaranızı alalım. Bir başka konferansımızda sizi dinleyelim. Bu güzel bilgilere ulaşalım.
Estağfurullah.
Teşekkür ederim. Sağ olun. Estağfurullah. Başka bir soru alalım. Mikrofonu rica edeyim.
Ben ilk konuşmacımıza sorumu sormak istiyorum. Şimdi Türkçe soracağım. Big Bang teorisinde gerçekleşen patlama sonrasında evren oluşuyor ve küre şeklinde genişlemeye devam ediyor. O zaman bu kürenin merkezi patlamanın tam olarak gerçekleştiği nokta. Yani evrenin tam olarak merkezi patlamanın tam olarak gerçekleştiği nokta. Evrendeki bağımsız cisimler haricinde de bütün sistemler etrafına dönecek başka sistemlere dahil. Yani gezegenler yıldız sistemlerinde, sistemler galaksilerde, galaksiler kendi galaksi gruplarında. O gruplar da belki başka merkezlerin etrafına dönüyorlar. Ve belki de bütün bu sistemler de patlamanın gerçekleştiği, yani evrenin merkezi etrafına dönüyorlar. Bilmiyorum, sadece benim düşüncem, benim şahsi bir teorim olabilir. Ve biz bu genişlemenin yavaşladığını biliyoruz. Patlamanın etkisiyle genişleyen evrende genişlemeyi yavaşlatan şey evrenin merkezinde olan bir cisim veyahut da bir yapı olmalı. O zaman genişleme tamamen durduktan sonra büzüşmeye mi başlayacak? Yani bu konuda ne düşünüyorsunuz?
I guess that's a very common question and one that I've had to think how to explain, because the way cosmologists look at this is different. It's kind of counterintuitive. But the picture I would have is, imagine looking at the surface of a balloon. And if you paint a bunch of dots on the surface of a balloon, when you blow it up, all of the dots move away from everyone. So if you look at any one dot and then measure the distances, you'll find that everything is moving away from that dot. But then if you move to another dot, the exactly same phenomena is true. And so if you restrict yourself just to the surface of the balloon, it's expanding, everything is moving away, but there is no center. Again, if you just stay on the surface of the balloon. And so that's the picture, that's a two-dimensional picture of how scientists look at our universe. That our universe is three-dimensional, but it's the surface, and it's growing and getting larger. There is no place where there's a center to the universe. And as bizarre as that sounds, that's the best explanation. At some level, you get used to it. You don't entirely understand it. In that sense... There was a long-standing question of, will the universe eventually slow down and stop? Will the expansion slow down and stop? Recent measurements have shown that while the universe did slow down for a while early in its history, it's actually the expansion is getting faster and faster, and so it will just expand forever into the future, and it will never collapse back on itself. So the picture is... the universe is expanding. Everything is moving away from everything else. There is no center, so it's not as though there's a center or an edge. You can move throughout the universe forever, and you'll never hit a boundary. And it's going to expand forever. In fact, the expansion will get faster and faster over time. So that's what the best scientific evidence says at this point. The short answer... your question, is there a center, is that there is no center, even though we're expanding. There's no center and there's nothing we're expanding into. It's just the fabric of the universe is getting larger, and that's what we talk about when we talk about the expansion of the universe.
Thank you.
Buyurun.
Benim de yine sorum fizikle alakalı olacak. Karanlık madde ve karanlık enerjinin evrenin oluşumunda bir rolü var mı? İkinci bir soru daha sormak istiyorum. Karanlık madde ve karanlık enerji evrenin düzeninin sürekliliğinde nasıl bir önem arz ediyor? Teşekkürler.
Dark matter and dark energy both do play a very critical role in how the universe behaves. They're part of the fabric of the universe that was created in the beginning as much as stars and galaxies are. Dark matter there's mass in the universe that doesn't give off any light. That's why it's called dark matter. Astronomers are not known for being real creative in their names. So dark matter is very important for forming galaxies and clusters of galaxies because it can start to clump before the normal matter can. So it actually plays a very critical role in making the galaxies and clusters of galaxies and actually eventually stars and planets. Our galaxy itself has a lot of dark matter. There's dark matter flowing through your body right now, through the whole room right now. So it plays a very critical role in how the universe develops. Similarly with dark energy, dark matter is probably a particle of some sort. We're trying to figure out what that is. That's actually one area of research that I'm actively engaged in right now. Dark energy is something a little different. It seems to be a property of space and time itself. And it's just, we don't know what it is. What we know is that its effect is that the larger the universe gets, the more it wants to expand. So we can mathematically describe it, but we really don't know what it is.
Peki şöyle söyleyebilir miyiz? Karanlık madde evrende maddenin bir araya toplanmasını sağlarken karanlık enerji de genişlemesini sağlıyor ve bu iki büyük güç dengesi sayesinde evren varlığını devam ettiriyor. Değil mi? Siz de benim gibi mi düşünüyorsunuz?
Yes, the dark matter is mass and so it's got gravity and will cause things to contract and want to clump up. That's its character. Dark energy is a property of space that the larger space gets, the more it wants to expand. So they're very integral in helping us understand the dynamics of the universe. I wouldn't say they help hold the universe together because they're part of the fabric of the universe just as much as electrons and protons and neutrons are, but they are critical in the universe's ability to host life. I mean, they play a very critical role in getting from the earliest moments of the universe to having a star like the sun, with a planet like the earth, with a moon like the moon that can host life.
Son bir soru daha alalım. Buyurun.
Ben evrimle ilgili soru soracağım. Darwinizm deyince materyalizmde hemen akabinde materyalizmi söylüyoruz. Şimdi Darwinistler iman hakikatleri, az önce sunumda da bahsettiğiniz hassas dengeler, bunları bir şekilde örtbas edebiliyorlar. Hepsinde bir evrim sürecine girebiliyorlar. Ben ruh konusunda, hani ruh tek cevapla evrimi nasıl çürütebilir? Ruhun varlığını nasıl delillendirebiliriz? Teşekkürler.
The soul. In my view, I don't know that we can directly measure scientifically the soul, but I would agree the idea that there is an immaterial part to our makeup is completely contrary to a materialistic view. But we can kind of indirectly, scientifically dance around that question. For example, the idea of consciousness. Human beings have this capacity for consciousness that has no known explanation. We do not know how to account for consciousness whatsoever. Human beings seem to have this capacity for symbolism, which again, I see as a manifestation of a spiritual nature that human beings possess, because it seems to separate us from other creatures. In Christian theology, and I don't know if there's something that corresponds to this in Islam, so I'd love to hear that kind of a conversation, but there's this concept called the image of God that human beings possess, and it doesn't mean that we are little gods, but what it means is that we have certain attributes that flow out of our spiritual nature, so that we have creativity, advanced cognitive ability, which would be a manifestation of symbolism, but we are inherently moral creatures. that we have a sense and a desire for justice, that we have a desire to create, or sorry, to connect to our Creator in some capacity. We have a sense that there's more to reality than what we see. And again, these are things that are difficult to measure scientifically, but like something like symbolism is something that we can measure. So when we make measurements that dance around the concept of the soul, we see a lot of evidence that indicates humans are somehow unique. But I don't know that we can, at this point in time, with our understanding, really provide a scientific evidence for a soul. But again, there's a lot of things that suggest that we as human beings are much more than physical entities. I have not studied these much. Maybe Dr. Babuna, you have. But in the United States, a number of Christian apologists who try to defend the Christian faith are very enamored with near-death experiences, where people presumably clinically die, but yet still have these things that are happening to them that they come back and describe with vivid detail. I actually had a friend who had two near-death experiences. He clinically died twice. And the way he described these were extremely vivid, as if he was describing walking down the street to go to the store. And people who have near-death experiences report on things that there's no way they could have known. But they were able to report on things that were happening to them during the attempts to medically revive them that they, again, would have no awareness or understanding of because they were clinically dead. So this is, again, a provocative line of evidence that suggests there's something that is immaterial about us, that we're more than just our physical makeup. I don't know, Dr. Babuna, if you'd like to comment.
It's like okay, another topic. This is like another topic for another panel.
I would like to talk about the essence of the matter, actually, and I will give a scientific explanation first. As I stated in my talk also, there are only electric signals travel in the brain. And we don't know there is a counterpart outside because nobody can exit his brain and test what is outside, actually. There is a famous quantum physicist, his name is Fred Allen Wolf, and he says the existence of the soul is inevitable, he says. And he also says, whatever is matter made from, it is not from the matter, he says. So quantum physicists know this fact very well, actually. There is no color outside, no sound outside, but we have these perceptions, and we have this evidence every night in our dreams, actually. In our dreams, our eyes are closed. There is no outside world, right? Yeah. And there is no matter outside. But we have sound, touch, and taste, smell, everything, right? We see people we have never seen before. We are in environments we have never seen before. We have actually different memory and different consciousness in our dreams most of the time. Sometimes we fly. This is against the laws of the nature, right? But the laws of the nature is different in our dreams, and we don't think it is, why are we flying? I couldn't fly. We never judge that in that way. So Allah shows us, actually, God shows us every night, Allah is the creator of these perceptions, and this is perceived by our soul. This is a metaphysical being. It is without a hand, without an eye, without an ear, can hear, can see, can touch, can taste, and smell. Dreams are very powerful evidences. And scientifically also, electric signals, the movement of the sodium ions and potassium ions in the lipid barriers generates these three-dimensional world, the sound, the beautiful ladies like you. It is evidence of God's existence. And God tells us also in Christianity and Islam the same way in the Bible and Gospel, breathe his soul. So we carry the soul of the God, but that makes us shadow beings. God is absolute being. Humans are the shadow beings. This is scientifically, logically, and from the point of religion, this explanation makes a lot of sense, I think.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody.